and what they're
Marty Vinson and Dante Youngblood. To see the whole interview, go to democracynow.org.
You're tuned in to KVOO Portland. The time is 4:59. Coming up next is your KVOO Evening News, but first this.
KVOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KVOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KVOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KVOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KVOO, where music makes the movement.
Guess what, everybody? It's 5 o'clock, which means it's time for your Friday evening news. But just before you do that, I just want to give a big thank you to all of our members. KVOO Community Radio is community supported. Not a member? Go online today to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. Okay, now it's time for your Friday evening news.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KVOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KVOO Evening News, Mayor Wheeler's protest ordinance has failed.
Ranked choice voting determines winner in Maine.
And in international news, Lula da Silva faces corruption charges.
Good evening. This is the KVOO Evening News for Friday, November 16th, 2018. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Jasmine Moneymaker. On Wednesday at City Hall, the Portland City Council voted down Mayor Ted Wheeler's proposed ordinance to further limit free speech. If passed, the proposal would have given the police commissioner, a man by the name of Ted Wheeler, the authority to designate the time and place for Portland street protests. In a relatively rare split vote, Commissioners Udaly, Fritz, and Fish voted against the proposal, with Saltzman and Wheeler voting for it. KVOO's Joe Meyer reports on each commissioner's statement before their vote.
Ostensibly to counter fascist demonstrators, Mayor Ted Wheeler and Police Chief Danielle Outlaw proposed a new law restricting gatherings in Portland's public spaces. This failed 3-2 last Wednesday. The rare split vote highlights the different perspectives of Portland's commissioners. The order in which commissioners vote rotates quarterly, and it was Commissioner Udaly's turn to go first.
Over the past 27 years, since I started attending rallies, marches, and protests, I have personally witnessed police brutality and excessive use of force. I have friends who have been victims of it and have sued the city and won settlements. I was part of a group of activists being illegally surveilled by the Portland police in the 1990s. I'm not taking this stroll down memory lane for fun or street cred. I'm painting a picture of my perspective as an activist, observer, and now policymaker. We have a policing problem when it comes to protests, but it's not just the protesters. We have each taken an oath to uphold the constitutions of the United States, the state of Oregon, and the city of Portland Charter. We have a moral and legal obligation to defend the constitutional rights of everyone, regardless of whether we agree with their politics, speech, tactics, or strategies. We also have a moral and legal obligation to ensure the public safety. There is a balance to be struck here. Unfortunately, I do not believe this ordinance achieves it. I look forward to continued communication and collaboration with advocates and activists, my colleagues, and the Portland Police Bureau on how to best achieve our obligations and ensure public safety but with all due respect to the mayor and the police chief, I vote no.
Portland Commissioner Hugh Daley's no vote was based on their personal experience on Portland streets and a skepticism of police neutrality. Commissioner Fritz was next.
I cannot support this ordinance. Oregon and the Pacific Northwest have been strongholds of white supremacy for over two centuries. The city of Portland has a long and shameful history of discrimination, hate crimes, and racism. This is unacceptable and must end. White supremacists are not welcome in Portland, and the City Council should make that clear in every decision we make. Violence during demonstrations is a community issue that has threatened public safety, resources, our economy, and our reputation as a safe and welcoming city. This is a community issue that requires community engagement and buy-in to address. From its very beginning as a state, Oregon has normalized hate speech and emboldened individuals to act on their hostility towards marginalized communities. Now, vitriolic rhetoric at the national level is further inciting violence all over our country. We can point to many examples, such as the tragedies that took place in Pittsburgh and Kentucky last month, in Charlottesville last year, and in the Max incident that occurred right here in 2017. We must counter hatred and divisiveness with love and unity. There are alternative solutions. Confident Portlanders can help the council define better solutions than this. No.
Commissioner Fritz's no vote was based on her understanding of Portland's long history of racism and police violence. Commissioner Fish was the swing vote.
Mayor and colleagues, after careful consideration, I cannot support this ordinance. My vote today is based on several factors. First, I have concerns about the constitutionality of the protest ordinance. At the very least, it sets us up for a costly and divisive legal battle. Second, I'm not convinced that we've done everything we can with the tools already at our disposal. Third, I am encouraged by the offers we have received from civil liberties and civil rights organizations to develop a new approach to address the alt-right violence in our streets. I am grateful to the many community leaders who shared their perspective during this debate. I'm proud of the conversation that we've had among colleagues on this dais, but today I vote no.
Commissioner Fish was conflicted and voted no, firstly, on constitutional grounds. Commissioner Saltzman had this to say.
The police, to my mind, are often just caught in the middle. And they get provoked, too. I mean, they're only human. You know, if you insult somebody, throw something at them, they're going to respond like any human would. They're going to try to protect themselves. They're going to be angry. These are very fundamental, basic human emotions. But I think that, you know, we have too much goading, and we're being played like a fiddle. And, you know, I can't help but think that this week is the 80th anniversary of the Kristallnacht, the night the Nazis played the German people like a fiddle to unleash their fury on Jewish merchants and Jewish residents of their country. And these groups are doing that to us. And I think we need a strong step forward. I think Mayor Wheeler's proposed ordinance, you know, it may not be constitutional, but we need to try things. We need to try solutions. We can't just sit up here and you know, celebrate the First Amendment and say, and at the same time express our concerns about the predominance of the alt-right and hate groups without trying to do something about it and protect Portlanders from getting into situations where they are going to be hurt, maimed, God forbid, even killed. And I see that the current path we're on provides no answers. This is a proposed answer. It's a modest step to protect Portlanders. And I thank Mayor Wheeler and Chief Outlaw for bringing this forward. And I'm pleased to vote aye.
That was outgoing City Commissioner Dan Saltzman. Independent of constitutional issues, he voted yes because something needs to be done. The mayor voted last.
I thought this was a very reasonable preemptive tool to have in our toolkit along with other other tools that we have. Other cities have successfully defended time, place, and manner restrictions in court. We heard a lot on the constitutionality, and like Commissioner Saltzman, I am not a constitutional lawyer, but I will tell you, constitutional lawyers are divided on the constitutionality of this particular ordinance. It maybe came a little bit too late in the game to help shape the narrative. I've learned one thing, colleagues, from this. If you put an ordinance out there and there's any question about its legality, make sure your lawyers get to the media first. Because once that frame is set, it is very, very hard to turn that frame around.
That was Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. His perspective is that the media are largely to blame for his failed ordinance. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
Yesterday, the results for Maine's 2nd Congressional District came in, and Democrat Jared Golden ousted Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin. This was a contentious four-way race, with two independents taking on the usual red and blue corporate candidates. The race was so contentious, in fact, that no candidate received 50% of top choice votes in the first round of counting. Then, for the first time in the United States history, ranked choice voting was used to determine the winner in a so-called instant runoff. Ranked choice voting was passed in Maine by ballot measure in 2016. Under this system, voters rank their choices among the candidates on the ballot. If no candidate gets 50% or more of first-ranked votes, the bottom candidate is dropped, and the second choice listed on those ballots is tallied. The process continues until a candidate achieves a majority of votes. The idea is to eliminate the spoiler effect. It allows citizens to vote for their candidate of choice rather than the lesser of two evils. In Maine's 2nd Congressional District, more independent voters selected Golden as a second or third choice, and the Democrat ended up winning with 50.5% of the vote.
And now it's time for today's episode of Black History 365.
Black history is happening every day. It's time to start thinking of it outside of a day or a week or a month. We hope to inspire you by enlightening you with those people and events that should be learned from and forever remembered.
Today is November 16th. On this day in 2001, Agbani Darego, representing Nigeria, was crowned Miss World. Darego became the first Native African to win the pageant's competition since its inception in 1950. Following her win, she landed a 3-year contract with L'Oreal Cosmetics. She was the second woman of African descent to accomplish this feat after Vanessa Williams. Darego has also modeled for Christian Dior and Oscar De La Renta.
Achievements and events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
There is another wave of meth usage hitting the city, and once again, the epidemic is having the biggest impact on the houseless community. Multnomah County releases annual reports on the number of people who die while experiencing houselessness in the city. The report includes data on where each person died, how old they were, their race, gender, and what caused their death. While the latest report released in late October shows little change in the number of fatalities for those in our city who are houseless, one piece of data stands out. For the first time in 7 years, methamphetamine has surpassed opioids as the top cause of death among people in the houseless community who died from a substance-related cause. In 2014, 22% of all homeless people whose deaths were caused by a substance died from meth use. 61% died from opioid use, either heroin, prescription painkillers, or other illicit concoctions like fentanyl. In 2017, homeless death linked to meth rose to 46%, with opioid deaths dropping to 41%. Houseless advocates in the city wonder if the state will handle this in a way that will prevent, that will use preventative measures to put a stop to the meth epidemic. Or will they once again criminalize the homeless community and not take the necessary action to end this epidemic?
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast when it's 6, it's an hour of music from the Deep Threes. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with a low of 42 degrees, winds from the northeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Today in history, in 1945, 88 German scientists holding Nazi secrets arrived in the United States. And the quote of the day is from Noam Chomsky, who said, quote, you cannot control your own population by force, but it can be distracted by consumption.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As fires rage in California, indigenous leaders and environmental groups from around the world are gathering at the California Air Resources Board meeting to oppose its plan to expand cap-and-trade to include tropical forests. Christina Onnested reports.
Indigenous leaders from Mexico, Brazil, Nigeria, and California are denouncing the California Air Resources Board's proposal to give fossil fuel companies carbon credits to pollute in the state in exchange for protecting tropical forests elsewhere, known as RED, reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. Indigenous communities say it's a scam that allows fossil fuel companies to pay to pollute and then encroach on indigenous lands. Nina Wa is chief of the Huniqui Federation in Acre, Brazil's Amazon.
In Acre, there's a complete lack of transparency in the implementation of RED Plus projects. They are violating our rights because they want to grab our territories. Mother Earth is not a business deal. She must not be bought and sold. We stand against this false solution that's called RED Plus, and we oppose the adoption of California's tropical forest standard because it is nothing more than privatizing our territories and taking them away from us.
Organizers, including Friends of the Earth, Amazon Watch, and Indigenous Environmental Network, say because of its controversy, RED is not used in any other carbon market in the world and shouldn't be used in California.
That was Christina Onnested reporting. The Urban Indian Health Institute, based in Seattle, released a report this week on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in urban areas. The researchers collected data from law enforcement agencies, families, Native communities, and used social media. They analyzed information from 71 U.S. cities dating back to the 1900s, with one of the earliest cases in the 1940s. They were able to identify 506 cases and say there are likely many more. Anita Lucchesi presented findings Thursday in Washington, D.C., saying the snapshot of data is intended to compile cases and examine how to better serve Native women. She says they hope the report will have lasting impact on all communities working to address gender violence.
This addresses not just us, but other communities of color who are also experiencing high rates of violence due to ongoing racism within police departments, within our communities. This is something that affects all of us. We're also hoping that this will amplify the voices of urban Indian families and the women that belong to them. Those women have been pushed out of the narrative. Those families have been pushed out of the narrative. I hope today, and I think we've been successful in that we've created a space for them to participate and for their stories and their experiences to be acknowledged.
The group is asking policymakers to include cities off reservations in legislation when addressing missing and murdered Indigenous women. The Native American Journalists Association and other press groups are urging the Muscogee Creek Nation to reinstate its press freedom law. The Oklahoma tribe recently repealed its Free Press Act and placed the tribally funded media outlet under the executive branch. Naja calls the move an alarming attack on press freedom in Indian country. The tribe's leader, James Floyd, released a statement Thursday saying they'll continue to support principles of free press. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. PBS wants to hear from you. Are you watching the four-part series Native America on your local PBS station? PBS wants to know how you continue your cultural knowledge and tradition. PBS is collecting stories like yours at pbs.org/native voices.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
As the people of Yemen continue to face displacement and famine, the UN is scheduling peace talks between the Iran-allied Houthi militant group and Yemen's Saudi-backed government. This humanitarian crisis started in 2015 when a Saudi-led military coalition aided Yemen's government in combating Houthi militants. The impact of the war has been largely felt by civilians, and 14 million Yemenis are currently without food. Following the crisis in Yemen and suspicions of the Saudi crown's involvement in the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, members of the U.S. Senate introduced legislation against Saudi Arabia. If this legislation is passed, it will prohibit the U.S. from refueling Saudi aircraft that conduct airstrikes in Yemen and will suspend weapons sales to the kingdom.
On Wednesday, the former leader of the largest nation in South America, Brazil's former president Lula da Silva, gave testimony in a deposition on the charges of corruption that were used to keep him out of the presidential race. Lula has been in jail for 6 months now on charges alleging corruption in the management of the Brazilian state oil monopoly Petrobras. Lula's supporters waited by the hundreds outside of the federal prison in the town of Curitiba to accompany him as he went to court. According to the Sydney Morning Herald, the Brazilian judge who brought down Lula has said he will become justice minister in the newly elected government of President-elect Jair Bolsonaro. The decision is expected to be praised by Brazilians eager for a crackdown on graft, but is also adding to the deep polarization in the country. In another controversial appointment, according to The Guardian, Brazil's president-elect has chosen a new foreign minister who believes climate change is part of a plot by, quote, cultural Marxists, end quote, to stifle Western economies and promote the growth of China.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 16, 2018. Here are the main points again. Mayor Wheeler's protest ordinance failed. Ranked choice voting had its debut in Maine. And in international news, Lula da Silva is facing corruption charges. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Meyer and Tammy Hobtius. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The evening news and public affairs director is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast are available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jasmine.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein welcomes the Sightline Institute to break down the results of the midterm elections and to look ahead to the upcoming legislative session. At 11, On the Ground Radio looks at the military-industrial complex, the centennial of Armistice Day, and Poland's White Power March, and much more. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button in the upper right-hand corner. This is Linda Olson Osterlund for KBOO Evening News.
Good night, Linda.
Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody. Yeah, we are good in here because it's, guess what? It's KBU Community Radio. The time is 5:25 and you're tuned in to your community radio station. And you know what? We're member supported. Are you not a member? What? Go on to KBOO.FM and click on that donate button. Don't like KBOO.FM? Guess what? Then I bet you like our mobile app. Or if you don't like our mobile app, you can even come on over to KBU. Because you don't have to wait for membership drive. You can become a member of KBU today. Become an invested listener. Oh, maybe that'll help you can hear me even more. Oh my gosh, let me say that again. Thank you to all of our supporters here on KBU Community Radio. Coming up next, The Spin. Here on your community supported, again, your community supported radio.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The Lyric Project Season 2, How to Say Goodbye, on Monday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Star Theater in Portland. The Lyric Project Season 2, How to Say Goodbye, is a multimedia event and love letter to music. People were asked to pick a favorite song and to make an audio recording reading the lyrics. The Lyric Project then made a film based on 10 songs. Again, that's The Lyric Project Season 2, How to Say Goodbye, on Monday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next is The Spin, here on KBU Community Radio.
To The Spin. It is that time for an hour where smart is sexy. The Spin, our weekly all women of color media panel. I'm coming to you live from Star FM Studios in Accra, Ghana. Our contributors are on the line via NPR Washington, D.C. We are on air nationally across the United States and internationally in Ghana. This program is brought to you by the African American Public Radio Consortium. Today on The Spin, we continue the Consent Convo, a public conversation campaign on consent. We talk the personal, the societal, the cultural, and the educational. We ask, what did we learn about consent? What do we need to unlearn? How do we create a consent-positive environment in our educational institutions? The Consent Convo is brought to you by The Spin, and emotional justice in partnership with Essence. Check out Essence every Thursday, and they'll post each show plus a piece on the Convo contributors. Consent, sharing, unlearning, reframing, reimagining. All of that coming up. Our contributors this week are two educators, Dr. Nadia Lopez and Frenchie Davis. Dr. Nadia Lopez is the founding principal of Mott Hall Bridges Academy, a Brooklyn, New York-based middle school. Dr. Lopez pioneers a leadership path showing underprivileged communities and creating positive institutions that have global impact. Due to Dr. Lopez's work in education, she has appeared on The Ellen Show, visited President Obama, and received the Medal of Distinction from Barnard College. In 2015, a Honi fundraiser raised $1.4 million to provide Nadia students with college trips and scholarships. Dr. Lopez is also a Black Girls Rock change agent, a TED Fellow, and author of The Bridge to Brilliance, an inspirational account of the creation of a path-breaking inner-city middle school in Brooklyn, New York. Frenchie Davis is an educator on human sexuality with a focus on the African-American community. Frenchie combines her expertise of social services, education, and pop culture to entertain, educate, and enhance the emotional and sexological intelligence of her audiences. Frenchie collaborates with several organizations from DC Public Schools, Metro Teen AIDS, the National Council for Black Studies, the College of Black Studies at the College of Charleston, and in 2015 was a research scholar at the Cuba Delegation for Race, Culture, Gender, and Sexuality. Frenchie is host of the radio show Libido Talk on New York's WBAI. Welcome, welcome, ladies.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Hello.
Let's start with your personal journeys on consent. How did you learn about consent? Who taught you? How did what they taught you shape your relationship to your body, to sex,